Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 162, I chat with Jude Mansilla, the founder and editor of HeadFi.org, all about headphones and earbuds. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded June 10th, 2013, episode 162, Semper HeadFi. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Manpacks, manly goods on a schedule. Get started today and have underwear, socks, toiletries, shaving supplies, and more delivered to your door. Visit manpacks.com/twit and get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. And we hope you all do. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the home theater geek and the director of content at avsforum.com. This week's guest geek is Jude Mansilla, the founder and editor of HeadFi.org, a website devoted to headphones and personal audio. Hi, Jude. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Big fan. So it's a real thrill to be on here.
Well, so glad to have you with us. Headphones are among the most popular topics we talk about on this show. So really glad
I've seen what you've done with Tile. Yeah.
Yeah. Tile's a great guest. He really knows his stuff.
Yeah, sure is.
But to get another perspective is always a good thing. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Listen, those who are tuned in live at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Jude, and I'll pass along as many as I can. And usually we get quite a few. So hopefully that will be the case today, and we'll start talking about headphones here. Now, first, before we do, though, I wanted to just get a little bit of history from you, Jude. How did you get into headphones? How did you start HeadFi.org? And we should say, by the way, that that's head-fi.org.
Right.
How did you get into this?
I've been in audio since I was about 13 years old, long before I could afford to be in audio. So
it can be an expensive hobby, that's for sure.
Yeah, it sure can. But like a lot of kids that read Car and Driver when they're 12 and 13, that's what I was doing. And so I was reading Julian Hirsch at Stereo Review, Stereophile, The Absolute Sound. And long before I could afford it, my first good rig was actually a portable CD player and the Sony MDR-V6 studio monitor headphones when they first came out. And that's really where I got my start. Fell out of it for a while, got into two-channel, you know, speakers. Worked in hi-fi during college at a high-end retailer, and just found headphones again because of just circumstances, office, home, not being able to listen late at night. So I think it was around 1999, 2000, I found a forum called Headwise, it was started by another guy. And the site kept, Headwise was a phenomenal forum, but it kept crashing. And so several of us started alternate sites. HeadFi just kind of stuck and grew from there. I don't think HeadWise is around much anymore, but some of the resources from HeadWise, they had some really helpful project libraries and things like that, are still around. Mm-hmm. But HeadFi just stuck, and it's been around for, I think it's about 12 years in about a week or so. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, happy anniversary then.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
And one of the cool things about HeadFi.org is that it's a forum as well. I mean, you put up your own reviews and articles about things, so headphones related. But also members can ask questions and get help from each other. It's a real forum, right?
Yeah, that's what really drives the traffic and why people come. It's the forum. It's certainly not what I'm writing that brings them in. I'm not the most prolific guy with respect to writing anymore, but we do our own gift guide and things like that. But really, it's the communication with the forum members wanting to ask questions to each other. Yeah, I mean, I know that you're affiliated with AVS Forum. You know how it is. And it's the forum that really drives all the activity. The other cool thing is because what we talk about is portable and small, we have meets. And so another really big centerpiece of HeadFi is our meets forum where all around the world at any given time, which I guess we can touch on maybe later in the in this podcast or in this video is there's a meet usually somewhere in the world, usually a couple or a few on any given weekend. Mm-hmm. And so we all get together a lot, too, because it is easy to share stuff like this, you know, this headphone gear.
Well, you know, that does make a lot of sense because headphones you can bring along. Having a meetup about speakers or flat panel TVs or projectors is a much more difficult thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Let's have a meet where we all bring 100-inch flat screens. But
exactly.
It's easier to share this stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of which, one of the things that you do every year is organize an event within the Rocky Mountain Audio Fest, a high-end two-channel mostly show in Denver. Yep. Called Can Jam. So right. speaking about sharing what you know, here's sort of the ultimate place to do that. How does that work?
Yeah. So several years ago, the late Al Stiefel, I don't know if you know Al, he was the one who ran along with his wife, Marjorie Baumert, the Rocky Mountain Audio Fest. And he'd approached me with the idea of bringing HeadFi into Rocky Mountain Audio Fest to get presence with headphones, high-end headphones and personal audio. Unfortunately, Al passed away before we had a chance to finish organizing it, but we got in touch with Ray Kimber, if you're familiar with Kimber Cables. Ray Kimber got in touch with me. We actually flew out, had a meeting with Marjorie Baumert, who runs Rocky Mountain Audio Fest now. That's Al Stiefel's wife. And we're going to be doing it for our fifth year in a row this year. It's Can Jam at Rocky Mountain Audio Fest. I think it's October 11th, 12th, and 13th at the Marriott Denver Tech Center in Denver. And it's a great event. Vendors come from literally all over the world. It's one of the best headphone audio events in the world, in my opinion. Obviously, Tokyo has a great show, too. Theirs is almost hard to beat because they get thousands of people just for the headphones there. But I still think Can Jam at Rocky Mountain Audio Fest is one of the best headphone events you can attend in the world. I don't think there's quite a ton of competition yet for that title, but certainly.
Well, how many different headphones? Events. How many different headphones can people try out at Can Jam?
Oh, geez. The focus tends to be on the higher end stuff, but there are any number of headphones. I mean, everything from Stax SR009s. You know, they're $5,200 electrostatic headphones. Fostex has some hot headphones right now that a lot of people want to hear. The Fostex TH600, 900, Sennheiser, the HD800. And their IE800. I mean, dozens. I don't even know of hundreds. A lot. And then a lot of people bring their own to plug into the various systems because there's amp manufacturers, DAC amp manufacturers there, and you can plug your own gear into other gear. And in fact, when the traffic's not super busy, sometimes the manufacturers will even let you take their gear to other tables to mix and match systems together. Again, another benefit of having mostly portable stuff. So, yeah, it's a phenomenal event, and vendors from all over the world there. It's the best opportunity to get to listen to this kind of gear.
Yeah, cool. Well, I've never been, but I hope to get there someday. And when I do, I'll certainly spend a lot of time at Can Jam.
Fantastic.
Headphones are an important part of the entire audio experience for people. As you say, late at night, other things going on. You want to just be able to turn it up as loud as you want, although I don't recommend damaging your hearing. No. but there are a lot of people who have a lot of questions. In fact, we got some in the chat room right now.
Okay.
Web 0592 is asking about the Focusrite Scarlett Studio package. I don't know that. Do you?
No, I don't know either. No, I'm not sure what that is.
There's something about headphones in that package. So there's something for you to look into. What about the Lee West PhD is asking about the Soundmagic E10 in-ears?
You know, they talk about Soundmagic products a lot on HeadFi. The only thing I have by Soundmagic are their wireless headphones. I've used a lot of wireless headphones. I'm actually surrounded by a lot of them here, but mm-hmm. I don't have specific experience with that. On HeadFi, though, the Soundmagic stuff's pretty popular. I wish I could answer his specific question that way, but I can't.
That's right. Joel H. Minipad is asking, any info on ear pods? Now, I've heard this term, and I'm not even sure quite what it means. Can you explain it?
Is he referring to, that's what I thought they called the newer version of the in-ears on
Apple iPod.
Yeah. I thought that's what they were calling them.
I thought that was sure. too. Maybe it is not a generic term, but an Apple term. Let's see if the chat room can can help us understand that a little better.
If that's what he's referring to, I think they're an improvement on the previous earbuds. But I will say that I don't usually use. I call them came with it. They sound good. Yeah. I think they sound good for what comes with the iPhone. But you know, I'm from HeadFi. And round our parts, we pretty much replace those immediately. Yeah,
I can understand. Well, I wanted to ask you about, because I said a little earlier, and we've been talking about how important headphones are, they do, though, I think, give you a different experience than speakers, do they not? I mean, is there a place for both?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, for me, just because of my life circumstances, I'm mostly listening to two headphones, but certainly there's a place for both. I still listen to speakers quite a bit, even at my desktop. I have right here, well, you can't see them, some Bowers & Wilkins MM1s, I believe, are the model number.
But those are probably really nice.
Yeah, they are, actually. They're really nice, and I have some PSBs as well. And so I still listen to loudspeakers, and I think there's certainly a place for both. But, yeah, the experience is very different. Obviously, with speakers, you have a more out-of-head experience, and that's one of the challenges of headphones is the imaging for some people, getting used to an image that exists largely within the head. But there's a lot of technology now, even in the realm of recordings, as well as processing and electronics, to try to take that experience out of head.
Yeah, in fact, Lawndog in the chat room is asking about the very thing that I was going to follow up with you regarding that comment, which is DTS... Headphone X, which you've probably heard about. You might not have heard it yet. I'm not sure. Have you?
I have. At CES 2013, so back in last January, they had an awesome demo in a theater. And actually, one of the guys from DTS recognized, I don't remember if we were wearing HeadFi shirts or whatever, but he chased us down at the Sony exhibit and said, you know, please come and listen to our, you know, they were aware of HeadFi and they wanted us to listen to the DTS Headphone X. So the next morning we came in and heard it. And it was really, really impressive. Really impressive. And actually, you clued me in on the Batman. Oh, not Batman. I'm sorry. Superman. The Man of Steel.
Man of Steel.
The app. And so I ordered the album and the Man of Steel album. For
excellent.
Those who don't know. Yeah. Is going to have Headphone X available for if you buy the deluxe edition. And so I ordered that. Actually, on your recommendation, and I also have the app already. So it is an impressive demo. Anybody can download. There's a free DTS Headphone X app. I think if you search for DTS, you should find it. I don't remember the exact name of the app at this moment.
It's called Z Plus. The letter Z and the plus sign.
Yeah, and download it, and it gives you your choice between three types of headphones for those who haven't tried it yet. In-ear, on-ear, and around the ear, or over-ear, I think they call it. Mm-hmm. And it's convincing. The image is very convincing, and it's an 11.1 setup. And they do a pretty cool job of taking it out ahead. So
exactly. That's what I was thinking about when you said speakers provide a more out-of-head experience. And I'm thinking that's true, except in the case of this new DTS Headphone X, which really takes the experience outside of your head and lets you, in fact, localize where the speakers would be on your walls if you had speakers. But in fact, there are no speakers there.
There are. Yeah, it was really the demonstration was really convincing at CES. And I think they've done a nice job with the app because there's a part where they give a demo right when you first run the app, when you choose what kind of headphones you're going to use with it.
Right,
and it
right.
gives all 11 channels, which I'm not going to name. Now, I don't think I could. There's like upper left rear, yeah. upper right rear. And anyways, when it goes through the channels and calls them out, it's pretty convincing. Certainly not as convincing as, like getting it tuned for yourself with something like a Smith Realizer, which we can talk about later or now. But it is probably one of the most convincing demonstrations I've had that was just a universal demonstration, one that wasn't calibrated specifically for me.
Right. Exactly. And you can use any pair of headphones.
Yeah, I've tried it with several now just to see how convincing. I'm still trying to find which ones would be most convincing. I haven't tried any of the in-ears, though, yet. I've done on the ear and around the ear with it, but not in-ear yet. So I'm curious to know how convincing it's going to be with the in-ears.
Yeah. I'll be very interested to hear what you think of that as well. In fact, SoCal Ray Jr. in the chat room mentioned what you just mentioned, the Smith Realizer unit. Have you had a chance to look at that or listen to that?
Yeah, so it was back in, I think it was 2008 at CanJam Florida. So before we were doing Can Jam at RMAF, there was a Can Jam event every year, which we're not currently doing now, that were independently organized by people in various cities. And we had one in Florida, and the Smith guys were there. And everybody was talking about this surround sound demo. And I'm not going to lie. I mean, I've never really, at that point, I hadn't been impressed by any surround sound headphone demos. So I didn't even try it. And so I sat down. As it turned out, there were no seats left. I sat down and I ended up with the Smith guys at dinner. And they convinced me that it was something special. I actually think, if I recall correctly, I think one of the founders of Smith Audio, one of the Mr. Smiths, was...
Yeah, they're brothers, I think.
The brothers, yeah. I think one of them was the inventor of the original DTS technology. Don't hold
Correct.
Me to that.
No, yeah. It's something like that. They were involved in the original DTS.
Yeah.
And then they moved on and did their own thing.
Yeah. So they told me that this was like completely out of head, and I didn't believe it. So they, after dinner, we went to the room. They unlocked it because it was closed. The show was technically closed at that moment. So we went into the room. They calibrated it for my ears. I think it took 5 or 10 minutes. I don't remember exactly how long it took. And so the way they had it calibrated was like this. So hopefully I don't make too much noise here doing this. They had a tilt sensor on a headphone. So they had Stax headphones, and you would tilt it. You'd take off the headphones and tilt them forward or whatever. And it would turn the headphones off and turn the speakers on. And it was I think it was a 5.1 or 7.1 demo. I don't remember exactly what it was. Mm. And then when you put the headphones back on, the speakers would cut out instantly and the headphones would come back on. And they wanted you to do it as quickly as possible. And when I did it, so they calibrated it for my ears first, playing a bunch of tones to calibrate my HRTF, my head related transfer function. So they got my settings, played this demo for me, and I literally didn't believe that it was switching. No, I'm not kidding. They had the volume matched so perfectly, and I didn't believe it was switching. So there was a guy, one of my friends was in the room, standing by the door, and I said, "Is it really cutting on and off?" And he's like, yeah, no, it really is. He goes, "Is it that convincing?" I was like, yeah, it absolutely is. I was absolutely floored by the Smith system. I don't have one now, but that's something that I may actually pick up someday because it was really amazing.
Yeah, the unfortunate part about the Smith system is that it's very expensive. It's like thousands of dollars.
$3,000 is it?
Something like that, yeah. But the good news, the good thing about it is that it has this head tracker that you stick on your headphone. And as you move your head around, it compensates and makes the virtual speakers appear as if they're standing still, which they would if you were listening to real speakers in a real room.
Yeah. I forgot to mention that part. Yeah, so you turn your head. So it didn't have a tilt this way, but left and right. And so you would do that. And it was so convincing and so out of head. Yeah. And it was actually a very interesting discussion I had with Mr. Smith. I don't remember which Mr. Smith it was, but he was talking one of the Smiths. And he was saying that the hardest channel to get right, if I recall correctly, was center front, to actually get that image out directly in front of you for a number of reasons, one of which was the fact that apparently when you're looking directly at somebody, you have a lot less pinna to work with, you know, the ear. You have less surface.
The outer ear flap is called the pinna.
Right, the outer ear flap. So when you're looking directly at it, you have less to work with. So, but their image, because it was calibrated for me directly. Oh, and the calibration process, for those not familiar, is you stick microphones in your ear, in both ears, and they test tones, and then the system then determines your specific HRTF, as they call it. Yeah.
Right. Head related transfer function. That is how sound waves bend around your particular head. And it's different for each individual because we all have different heads.
Yeah. It's a crazy demo, though. I mean, it was really out of this world. Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about Headphone X, DTS Headphone X, is that it also has a facility to create an HRTF, head related transfer function, and the ambience of a particular room, but it's not customizable like the Smith Realizer is.
Right.
Instead, when you get the Headphone X demo material and the Man of Steel score that's been remixed in 11.1, what you're hearing is Hans Zimmer's head-related transfer function his mixing studio. Yes, exactly.
So hopefully he and I have similar heads and ears, and then maybe I'll get a 100% effective out-of-head experience. But even then, the demo track they had, I don't have the album yet. You probably already have it, don't you? But
I do, yeah.
Oh, you're all connected. But I had
went to
order
a press event, and they gave it to us. You know,
yeah,
what can I say?
I ordered it from Amazon or Best Buy. I don't remember which one, but So there's a demo track on the app, and again, it's It's very impressive.
Yeah, it really is. And I do recommend that people do get that deluxe edition of the Man of Steel score CD, where you can then get the entire score remixed in 11.1 and encoded in this Headphone X.
Okay, so a little off topic. Is it a good score? Have you listened to it by now, right? I'm a huge good score fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I happen to like it. I've seen a number of comments on AVS Forum and elsewhere that have said, well, I don't really like Hans Zimmer, blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. That's fine. It's totally subjective. I like what Hans Zimmer does typically, and I really thought the score to Man of Steel was great. In particular, he uses one of the elements, strong elements in the score is a drum circle. He hired like the best percussionists in the world, 10 or 12 of them, put them in a studio in a circle and gave them this bunch of music to play. And it's literally this, you're surrounded by drums. And it's really, really impressive. I thought it was great.
And, I'm going to have to try that. Yeah, I haven't even heard that yet because mine, I'm not as connected as you. Mine doesn't come till tomorrow, but when everybody else gets theirs. But no, I can't wait to hear it. That'll be the first track I go to. Is it actually called Drum Circle or something?
No. I forget what it's called. The Drum Circle is featured throughout the score.
Okay.
I mean, just listen to the score. You'll hear it. It's right. Hard to avoid. He also did an orchestra, 7 or 8 pedal steel guitars all playing together. So he did some unusual things in this score, which if you're a movie score guy, you'll really totally dig.
Yeah, and he did Gladiator, which was always one of my favorites.
Yes. Yeah. And just to put in a little personal plug, I actually played on that score.
No. What did you play?
I played seashell trumpet. Right. So from the South Pacific, you see these images of the South Pacific Islanders playing these big seashell trumpets.
OK,
I played that. I played the Swiss Alp horn. I played the Jewish shofar, the ram's horn trumpet. Really, what he wanted was a bunch of very rude sounding horn sounds for when the gladiators come into the arena. So you remember the scene in the arena where you hear you see some trumpet type instruments and they're going, wah, wah. Well, that's the sound that they're making is really me.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding.
I didn't know that. I had no idea. How cool is that? Okay, now, first of all, I'm not even sure where you learned to play these instruments.
Well, I'm a trombone and tuba player. I'm a brass player by nature. I've been doing that for the last 40 years. And I love odd, weirdo instruments. And so when I got into seashell trumpets, a friend of mine who was also a composer working at Hans Zimmer Studio told him about my seashell trumpets. In fact, I played them also on a score that my friend wrote for Jeff Bridges' movie called White Squall.
I've seen
and
that.
Yeah, that was a full of, you know, stuff in the ocean. So of course the seashell trumpet made perfect sense.
Right.
But then my friend told Hans Zimmer, who he was working in his studio, hey, you know, if you want some really interesting horn sounds, you know, you should check out these seashell trumpets. And so that's how I got that gig.
I'm gonna have to listen to it again. I mean, Gladiator, I think I listened to nonstop for a year. I mean, there it was at the point where I could actually hum it from almost beginning to end. No, fantastic. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I'm going to have to listen to that now. You remind me actually, I guess it's related. I went to a binaural recording session with, David Chesky at HD Tracks and Chesky Records.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
as binaural
yeah.
recordings, and I went to a recording session they did for an album called Explorations in Space and Time, and it was pretty much an all percussion album. And then you're talking about these exotic instruments. So there's a percussionist named Jamie Haddad, and he plays with Paul Simon. He was there, and man, he was pulling out instruments, percussion instruments. I mean, that I've never even seen before or heard really, and he was just playing them. So your seashell, what was it called? The seashell trumpet?
Seashell trumpet, yeah. Triton's trumpet, sometimes what it's called.
And all that other stuff you mentioned kind of reminds me of that.
Exactly. Drummers, man, they can have huge collections of things. Well, you mentioned binaural recording. Tell us a little bit about what that is, because I've always been fascinated by that.
So binaural recording is recording, I'm trying to simplify this as much as possible, listening on, the recording's made specifically to listen to through headphones. For those without experience of binaural recordings, what it is you put microphones in a dummy head's ears. I guess technically you could put them in a human's ears as well, but most use dummy heads, of course, for obvious reasons. And you put them in a dummy head's ears. And not just any dummy head. It's not like a mannequin you take from, you know, a department store. I mean, these are
very... No, it's got to be very specifically, carefully...
Yeah, they're purpose-built for the purpose. They, you know, they're used for a lot of things for... Actually, Tile uses a dummy head like that to measure headphones. Automotive companies use them to measure sound inside of car interiors, things like that. But anyways, they're made for the purpose. And you put the microphones in the ears and you record that way, and it creates, when you wear a headphone, the out-of-head experience if it's done well, and if the HRTF of the dummy is hopefully at least, you know, somewhere in line with yours, it can be a very convincing image. And so David uses dummy heads. David Chesky uses dummy heads to make his binaural recordings. And then he worked with Dr. Edgar Schueri from Princeton University to come up with some filtering mechanism that allows... Okay, so his first album that he did, the one I talked about just briefly there, that Explorations in Space and Time, the first binaural album he did, he had two recordings, sound field recording, binaural recording. So when you bought the album, you got both sets. So however many tracks.
And the sound field recording was more like a more traditional type of recording?
Yeah, more traditional for sure. So to listen to through speakers. And then there was the binaural recording. So now he's worked with Dr. Schueri from Princeton, who's literally a rocket scientist who happens to have also a 3D sound lab at Princeton University. They worked on a filtering scheme. And I think I'm trying to remember what David calls it, binaural plus or something like that. That allows you to have just one set of recordings to have binaural and also to listen through with speakers. I'm not sure exactly how that works. I can't explain what Dr. Schueri is doing there.
Right. The important thing to note, though, is that when you get something that was recorded binaural recording, it's important to listen to it on headphones because that's the way it's intended.
Yeah, it has to be through headphones, yeah. Except for the binaural, the new ones that David's doing, which, again, are also made to be listened to through speakers.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll be interesting to see how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And some of the recordings that David's done are more convincing than others. The Explorations in Space and Time, in terms of the out of the head imaging, at least for me, I guess it would vary from person to person. But Explorations in Space and Time, when we do a video series. It's not nearly as popular as this show. It's called Head-Fi TV. And we did one about Explorations in Space and Time. And Joe, who works with me, Joe Swick, who produces the videos, had the idea of mixing in one of the tracks, I don't remember it, like 9 minutes. And we say at the beginning of the video, make sure to listen to this with headphones. And so about nine minutes or so through this video we're doing about the album, he starts mixing in one of the tracks. And the responses in the comments section of our YouTube video are hilarious because people will be like, oh my God, when that came in, I thought there was somebody knocking at my door at like 3 a.m. Or oh my God, I thought my neighbors were having a party and I was freaking out. And like, I thought somebody was coming up to me or coming up on me. And I mean, just those comments alone probably sold thousands of albums for David. Because, you know, it was a very convincing out of head image when these drums start kind of coming in as Joe mixed them in. It's very confusing the very first time you hear it if you didn't know the album and you didn't know what was coming. And so even now, every once in a while, we'll get a comment sneak in about that very thing. Yeah, and that probably sells that album.
That's very funny. And you remind me of your videos, and I want to make sure everybody understands that you do produce a series of videos about headphones, reviews of headphones, I think. Or tell us about what you're covering in those videos.
Yeah, we're covering anything. I mean, obviously, mostly headphone-related stuff. Our last one, we just covered the New York Hi-Fi meet and a story about how Hi-Fi started. So kind of the history of Hi-Fi. And that was really intended for veteran Hi-Fiers. Or even people who might just be interested in the history of Hi-Fi. But most of the time we're talking about gear. And then we also do interviews. So we've interviewed recently Fong Bian from Hi-Fi Man. I don't know if you know Fong.
Oh, I do. I've met him, actually. Very, very smart guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like a mad scientist. yeah, he literally is like a mad scientist. He had an apartment in New York, and I went to it once, and it looked like... PCBs everywhere and various states of assembly and drivers and various mounting. I mean, he's always experimenting. But we interviewed him recently, Val Colton from Vimoda. I don't know if you know Val from Vimoda.
I know the company. I know the company name.
Yeah, he's a pretty popular figure on Hi-Fi. He's on there a lot, and he uses a lot of Hi-Fi feedback in his products, in his last few products. And so we'll do interviews and, of course, talk about gear, and that's really what Hi-Fi TV is about. It's talking about stuff that really no one else really cares enough, I think, to talk about. Although that's changing now. That's changing now, I guess. Yeah, and there's more people interested in talking about headphone audio. Tile also does his own video. He does a nice job.
Yeah, he does do a nice job. And can people get HeadFi TV from your website, HeadFi.org?
Yeah, we usually put a note. We don't make as many of them as I'd like, but we when we do, we put it on the homepage. And then if you go to YouTube, it's under the username HeadFi, H-E-A-D-F-I is the channel name. No dashes or anything like that, just H-E-A-D-F-I. And then you can also subscribe to them on iTunes if you like subscribing to stuff like that through the through the podcast subscriptions. Yeah.
Now, talking about Tile and what he does and you and what you do, I just wanted to touch upon the fact that you're both, I think, are serving a very important need. Tile spends a lot of time doing measurements, as we know, and he's been on the show and we've talked about the measurements that he does. You spend most of your time on reviews listening and giving your subjective impressions.
Yeah, I don't measure anything, so that's really all I can give. Yeah, so it is. My reviews are definitely no measurements included. Yeah,
but you spend a lot of time listening. And do you have a certain set of tracks that you always listen to compare one set of headphones to another, or is it always different music? How do you go about your review process?
Yeah, I mean, I have in various genres. I have certain tracks I listen to over and over and over. For me personally, I can't speak for anybody else's review methodology. For me, that's important. So I'll have a few tracks that I'll play right away that tend to unveil, for example, Boomy Bass, Sibilance, and, you know, things like that. Just things that unveil immediate problems for me. Or, you know, again, I can only speak for what I'm hearing. But yeah, so I do have some tracks that I use regularly. But ultimately what I do is I just listen. So we do that gift guide that I mentioned earlier, and we update that twice a year. And that's almost everything in there is just my impressions of gear, which I state very clearly in the introduction that it's just mostly one man's reviews of gear he's heard and his opinions therein. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's really
very informed opinions, I would say. And the more that you do it, you know, the more informed you get, obviously, because as new headphones come out, you've listened to the ones in the past and you say, oh, yeah, these have a more transparent mid-range or sparkly high-end or not-so-boomy bass or whatever. I think what you're doing is giving valuable information.
I hope. You know, I mean, ultimately, even if you disagree with me all the time and consistently, well, there's probably then value in running away from my suggestions, right? Because then you can consistently move the other way and know that you're probably going to be safe. So, I mean, there's value in that, too. So, yeah, I don't know how valuable it is, and you hope that the gift guy gets a good response, and we get a lot of traffic to it on the site. So, it's hopefully it's helpful.
That way, that particular thing is a very, very valuable thing, I think, because you're basically just consolidating a bunch of headphones in one place and saying which ones you like the best and giving them ratings, I assume, things like that.
Yeah, I don't give star ratings or anything like that, although there is a review mechanism on the site with which users do that all the time. On HeadFi, we have a star rating system you can rate very
speedily. Oh, yeah, and that's the other thing. Yeah, that's the other thing about a forum like yours and AVS is that users can submit their own reviews.
Yes.
Which I think is really, really cool, because then you can potentially get the impressions from a bunch of different people. And if most of them agree that this headphone is great or that one sucks or whatever, then you have some ammunition that's, you know, somewhat reliable and useful.
Yeah, I mean, earlier I was being asked the question about a headphone I hadn't heard yet, a couple of them.
Right.
And if they keep asking specific model questions in the chat rooms, I'm afraid I may disappoint them a lot. Again, you know, there's so much stuff out there and there's no chance to hear it all. So even for me, I try to look at what everybody's talking about and then try to get some of that to come into the gift guide. I think for the next holiday gift guide, we're not going to have time to do it this summer, but I'm for our summer update, but I'm hoping we can include more of the community in choosing maybe some of the products for future gift guides so that we can kind of have a more varied opinion than just my own.
Well, that's great. You know, we are getting a bunch of questions in the chat room and not necessarily about specific brands. So I'm going to get to those in a minute. But before we do, I do want to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is manpacks.com. Now, as a guy, and most of us here are guys, let's face it, there's all sorts of basic stuff that we need, right? You know, underwear, socks, shaving equipment and supplies. Not that I use that, but most guys do, or a lot of them anyway. And, you know, having to go out and shop for that or even going online and browsing around trying to find that kind of stuff, it's really not my idea of fun, but you don't need to do that anymore. You can set up a recurring delivery of all the supplies that you need from manpacks.com. You don't have to shop or really worry about it at all. Every 3 months, you will get a package with the materials and the things that you use every day, but just don't want to think about. And you can join the thousands of people who have already signed up. Those few women who are watching, certainly this is a great gift idea for your guy. It's a start it, stop it, change it anytime subscription service that will let you manage your account, change things at any time you want. Every product is tried by guys and have been found to be approved. I must admit, I've started using this service myself. They even carry the underwear and socks that I normally buy anyway. So means I don't have to make a trip to the store. It's really very good, especially with free shipping, free returns, and easy account management. Now, for TWIT listeners, we actually have two exclusive offers from Manpacks. Visit manpacks.com/TWIT and get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. So what are you waiting for? Go to manpacks.com/TWIT and get started today. And we thank Manpacks very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWIT network. Okay, let's go back to get a couple questions in here. Let's see here. Oh, Warren P. Chi had a nice comment here. Important to remember that even the objective data obtained from graphs must be translated to subjective for our specific ears. So I think Tile made this point, too, that that there's a place for both. I remember having him and Steve Guttenberg on the show talking about, you know, the relative merits of subjective evaluations versus objective measurements. And I think you'd agree, wouldn't you not? Would you not that there is a place for both, really?
Oh, yeah, there's no question about there's a place for both. I look at Tile's measurements as well. His are the ones I count on probably the most. There are a lot of people doing them. But Tile has been doing them for a good long time. He has, I understand his methodology because he's really put it out there, shown you kind of his whole setup and his methods. He even had one of our HeadFi members his name is Peter, he goes by Macedonian Hero, who's a Six Sigma expert, evaluate his methodology and repeatability and things like that. It was pretty cool. But there's certainly a place for it. And, you know, I personally... I have obviously a lot of gear, access to a lot of gear, and I get a chance to listen to a lot of stuff that I'm interested in. And to me, there's no beating that. Right? For me, that's what it comes down to, is eventually I need to get my ears on it. But for some people that won't be able to listen to a lot of the gear they're interested in, they're trying to get as many data points together as they can, as much information as they can get. And I think measurements are certainly one of those things that can help them to understand certain characteristics of a headphone. So yeah, there's certainly value in that.
I agree. Aphex in the chat room is asking a different question. What do you think of burn-in for headphones, or, you know, for brand new headphones? Is that myth, or is there something to it?
I don't think it's myth. I mean, I have headphones, and maybe it's sample to sample variation, and where I've thought that I've had a difference where it sounded to me like it was indeed changing over time. So I believe in it, that it can happen, and that it does happen with some headphones. And then, as you can imagine, I wish you could see a whole shot of the room. I mean, there are actually some models where I have a few different units of it, and I've compared the brand new. I've never really done a formal study. I think Tile did try to do that through measurements, but where I've compared a brand new one to one that I've had for years, and it sounds different. Now, that could be sample to sample variation or running changes in the line as well. But yeah, I mean, in my opinion, yeah, it does exist. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. F-Loop in the chat room is asking about high end headphones, and he mentions JPS Labs Abyss planar magnetic headphones for something like $5,500.
Yeah.
You know, are headphones in this price category really worth it?
Well, I mean, it's like anything else, you know. To me, they are. And to anybody that's really into this, obviously they would be. I don't think anybody who owns a Stax SR 009 electrostatic headphone, for example, is going to tell you that it wasn't worth it. It's a phenomenal headphone. The Abyss, I don't have experience with, by the way, but I will be hearing it very soon. There'll be one arriving here for review, a possible inclusion in the summer update to the gift guide. But yeah, I think they're worth it. I mean, obviously, I'm biased. I mean, I found the headphone audio website. So
sure. Well, it's like, and as you say, it's like anything else. As far as I'm concerned, as you spend more money, hopefully you'll generally get better performance. Not always, but the general trend. And at some point, though, you will reach what I call a knee point, at which the price to performance ratio kind of flattens out, and you can spend a bunch more money and only get an incremental improvement.
Yeah,
have you found that to be true?
Oh yeah, and I think that point is moving lower. I mean, they're getting better at making headphones. You know, like today, I know one of the focus things that we were looking at focusing on maybe is in-ears. And in-ears are a place where a lot of advancements were made. I mean, nowadays, and you know, some of the headfires may disagree with me. I actually kind of find it harder to find an atrocious in-ear. You know, there's so many good ones out there now, and the companies are getting good at making them. And I find it to be easier to find a good one, not necessarily a great one, but a good one now than before. It was easy to find really crappy ones in the past, but they've just gotten better at making them. So I think that point is moving down. That price is moving down where the diminishing returns starts to kick in. Yeah,
exactly.
But I mean, if you're kind of a nut, and you're like me, you're always trying to. Well, I'm not always trying to get that last nth percent, but in the pursuit of that, yeah, sometimes you can get in some really high priced stuff. I have. But again, it is just how you value it. I mean, obviously, if most of your listing is going to be done on a plane, you're going to have certainly a very different set of things that you value than a guy that's buying it to listen at night at home. For that guy that's going to be listening at home, who's a huge music nut, and most of the high end guys, at least not all, some are gearheads. We touched on this in one of the HeadFi TV episodes we just did. Some people are just gearheads; they just want gear, and they're really into it. And there's nothing wrong with that. Hey, man, if that's what you're into, by all means. But I found that most of the people that are into the really high end gear, the high end headphone gear, are also big time music geeks as well as gear geeks.
Right.
And I found that to be true, not just in headphone audio, but in audio in general, because you can get into conversations pretty easily that start to look like, I don't know if you remember that movie with Jack Black and John Cusack, High Fidelity. Do you remember?
Oh,
some
yeah,
of
yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I found that I've actually, we can get into discussions like that rather commonly. I mean, so I meet and I am a music geek of, and you meet a ton of those guys. And so a lot of the high end guys tend to be real big music geeks as well. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your in-ears for a bit, because I did want to make sure we touch on that in this show.
Sure.
As you say, the quality of in-ear monitors or in-ear headphones, earbuds, if we might call them that, has improved over the years.
Yes.
I've always wondered how it can be that these tiny little earbuds that stick into your ears can possibly match the sound quality or even come close to those of over-the-ear headphones with much larger drivers, maybe even a tweeter and a woofer. How can earbuds or in-ear headphones come close to that?
Well, just purely from the standpoint of physics, they are quite a bit closer to your eardrum just by virtue.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Jamming them in there, and so and the demands on them are certainly different than that you might get with loudspeakers. I mean, so for example, you can use a single driver. I think it's easier to make a single driver headphone, either over ear or in ear, relative to a loudspeaker, where depending on the demands or what you're trying to accomplish with it, you almost have to go to a multi driver configuration with crossovers and the like. Now, mind you, some in ears, of course, are multi driver and do use crossover networks as well. But it's just, I think in terms of getting the big sound out of an in ear, it's largely just a product of physics and the fact that it is so close to your ear and often forming a sealed chamber within your ear.
And then there's the difference between generic in-ear headphones, which have just little pads that go in, and then custom molded ones where you actually go to an audiologist. Somebody in the chat room earlier, I was looking for it, I couldn't find it. said something about a woman on Techzilla actually got fitted for custom molds. So the audiologist came in and squirted the goo into her ear, and it has to sit there and set, and then it gets pulled out and used as a mold to actually create a set of earphones, earbuds, if you will, for your ears alone. And ears are as much individual as fingerprints, right? They're unique to each person.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what you have to do.
That's Veronica Belmont from from Techzilla. She actually, her and Patrick, they contacted me to ask about, she wanted to get custom sleeves fitted to her Velodyne V-Pulse in-ears. And those are nice. Those are actually nice in-ears for the money. Guttenberg actually is a big fan of the Velodyne pieces. I like them too for the dough. But I asked her, you know, are you opposed to getting just a full-on custom as opposed to just a custom sleeve? Because do you know Stephen Stone writes for the Absolute Sound?
I know Stephen.
He did an article on his website about custom sleeves. He didn't have a lot of luck with them, and so I just said, you know, how about doing a whole custom? And she said, oh, I'm open to that. So hooked her up with Ultimate Ears, and she went out and had her impressions done. And she did. So go to techzilla.com. Anybody who wants to go see, she's a lot more pleasant to look at than I am. And you can watch her getting her ear impressions done at the audiologist. And she actually talks about the UE11. So we originally intended to get her the UE18s, which is a high-end model from Ultimate Ears.
From Ultimate Ears, right.
Yeah, from Ultimate Ears and or Logitech by UE. Sometimes they go by now. But when they did her impressions, they found that her ears were too small for the for that many drivers. I think there's 6 drivers a side. Don't hold me to it in the UE18.
And 6 and drivers so, in an in-ear headphone?
Yeah. 6 drivers per side. And then some of them, I think, go as high as 8. Yeah. We had to instead choose the UE11 because she said she liked the bassiness of the V-Pulse. So we chose a model that kind of fit with her profile. And then she did an episode in one of the episodes of Techzilla just recently, actually. She talked about UE11. She's really digging them. And when Patrick asked her the simple question, so for those not familiar with custom in-ear monitors, the good ones, not that you have to spend this much, but the top of the line ones tend to be rather expensive, $1,000, $1,100, $2,000 on the high side. And you can get really nice ones for a few hundred bucks, $300, $400. But the ones that on HeadFi that are talked about the most are the ones that are on the higher end side. Which is what I have the most experience with when it comes to customs is the higher end stuff. And in my opinion, which a lot of people don't realize and which Veronica discovered, and you can kind of see the enthusiasm on her face when she talks about them, is in my opinion, high end custom in-ear monitors are some of the best sounding headphones. Not all of them, of course, but some of them are some of the best sounding headphones of any form factor, over ear, in-ear, whatever, that I've heard. Yeah, some of them are amazing. Yeah.
Wow. Did you realize, I just learned not long ago, that Westone is getting into in-ear monitors? They are a big hearing aid company, so they know a lot about sticking stuff in your ear.
Yeah.
But apparently they're getting into the earphone business, the in-ear monitor business.
Yeah, they've been in it for quite a while. They've been in it. Actually, they worked with Jerry Harvey, who founded Ultimate Ears, and Jerry worked with the guys from Westone, I believe, to create some of the first custom in-ear monitors, or the very first custom in-ear monitors. And then Westone makes customs and universal fits. Actually, they make some of the best-sounding universal fits. The Westone 4R is one of the best-sounding universal fits on the market. I don't remember what the MSRP is on those. I think they run about $400 or $500. Mm-hmm. And those are fantastic. So they've been in it for a while, and their custom in-ear monitors, like the ES5, in my opinion, is one of the best-sounding custom in-ear monitors out there now in terms of just for general use. And if you tend to run with a more audiophile type sound signature or sensibility, I think the ES5 is a really fine choice. It's probably one of my favorites of the customs. Yeah, they're phenomenally good.
How much does it cost to get custom molds like Veronica did? It's like a couple hundred bucks or so, isn't it?
No. Actually, I've never paid more than 50 or 60 bucks. So I've never paid more than 50 or 60 bucks for a pair. So now here's the thing. So what I like to do is my favorite thing is to go to an audio show. So if you're in the Far East and you go to, for example, the Tokyo Headphone Festival, they'll always have audiologists there. The custom in-ear manufacturers will have them there, and they'll do your impressions on site. And also at Can Jam at Rocky Mountain Audio Fest, there'll usually be a few audiologists there doing your impressions on site. And the ones I've gotten at the shows have been very good because the manufacturers tend to bring people, you know, audiologists locally they've worked with, or people even that are full timers with them that are used to working with custom in-ear monitors and kind of understand the demands a little bit better. And so, but that said, I mean, I've gone to audiologists that were just recommended. Almost every custom in-ear manufacturer will have on their site, based on your location, recommended audiologists to go to. And I've had really good luck there. I haven't actually had to have any refits yet. And I have a lot of customs. Every once in a while, people will have to get refits. I've not had to have any yet. Thank goodness.
Yeah, really. Here's a different question from the chat room. KC and NH, do you have an opinion about tube headphone preamps, or amps, I guess you'd want to be say, for under $300?
Okay, I haven't played with a lot of low-cost tube headphone amps. You're going to have to go to HeadFi and ask the forum members because they'll probably have a bunch of recommendations for you. Most of the tube amp stuff I've played with has been on the more expensive side. You know,
certainly Stax makes some very nice but very expensive tube amps.
But theirs are to drive their electrostatic headphones. So if this person is using Dynamics, I mean, I would one of the first companies I'd recommend check out because they have tube amps made in the U.S. That are phenomenal. Shit Audio and Woo Audio will probably get you. Actually, you know what? I take that back. So Shit Audio, and I know based on what I'm saying, you're probably wondering how it's spelled or assuming it's actually S-C-H-I-I-T. I think you know the guys, Jason Stoddard, formerly Sumo, Mike Moffitt, Theta. These guys came together and they created a company called Shit Audio, S-C-H-I-I-T. I'm trying to keep a straight face as I say it on your
show. Yeah, I know. We can say that because it's the name of a company and it's not.
It is. And it's spelled S-C-H-I-I-T. Let's just get that out there. And they make
why in the world they would name their company that? I have no idea.
Yeah, you're gonna have to ask Jason to mic that one. They make some low cost tube amps, and that I think are in your price range. Definitely check them out. The Valhalla's one, and depending on the headphones you're running as well, it's kind of hard to know without knowing what headphones he's running what to recommend that way. But Woo Audio also has a lot of tube amps in that price range, and I know there's a bunch of others as well. But admittedly, again, I don't. When it comes to tube amps, most of what I've played with has been a little bit more expensive.
Yeah. What about, I was going to also ask you about noise-canceling headphones. Before the show started, we were sort of chatting offline and talking about the Bose Quiet Comfort 15s, which I, in fact, use. One of the only Bose products that I actually like. Mm-hmm. But they really do a great job at noise-canceling on airplanes and so on. I even take them sometimes to really, really loud movies. And I know I look like a dork wearing these headphones, in addition to custom molded earplugs in my ears, but man, sometimes I really feel like I need them. Is there a way to have active noise canceling headphones and still have good sounding sound quality?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're not going to get, you'll see a picture behind me. Oh, wrong side over here. The Sennheiser HD800. Well, I'm not good at this, but right there.
It's the
Sennheiser HD800, and you're not going to ever get that wirelessly, at least not now. In a noise canceller, my apologies. So you're not going to get that kind of sound in a noise canceller, but you can still get good sound. Now, it depends. Now, Alan Henry from Lifehacker contacted me recently and said, hey, listen, we're going to be doing a piece on active noise cancellers. Can you help me with the piece? So go to Lifehacker. .com and you'll see, or you can just go to headfi.org and we have a link to it on the homepage. But anyways, the Bose QC15 is good and it has better active noise canceling than any other noise canceller I've used so far, any active noise canceller in the consumer space. I've tried aviation headsets, and if you've ever tried those, the ones I've tried sound terrible with music, but block a ton of noise. But in the consumer space, the QC15 blocks more noise actively than any other headphone I've tried so far. And to me, if you're traveling on a plane, if you're a commuter, and say, for example, 90% of your listening is on a plane or a train, it's really hard not to recommend the QC15 if you don't like in-ears, because you can block a lot of noise with in-ears as well passively, as much or more really than the QC15 even. But but if you're looking for a noise canceling over ear, it's really hard to beat the QC15 for noise canceling. However, if you have a mixed use scenario where you're kind of like, no, I want noise canceling, but it's also going to be my primary headphone, because a lot of people that are spending $300, $400 on a headphone, it's going to be not just for travel, it's going to be their primary headphone. Yep. And so for that, there are other considerations. Right above, I'm not going to try this again, the UE 9000 by Logitech UE is a wireless noise canceller that actually sounds really good as a passive headphone as well. So it doesn't have noise canceling as effective as the Bose QC15. I personally haven't found anything that does. I haven't tried every active noise canceller on the market, obviously, but I've tried an awful lot of them. And in fact, go ahead.
I'm just going to ask, have you tried the PSB M4U?
Yeah, the M4U2 is their noise canceling model. They have an M4U1, which is passive only. And that is a fantastic headphone. Now, for those of you who don't know, PSB is a loudspeaker manufacturer. Paul Barton is the designer. I think the company is named after Paul and Sue Barton, if I recall correctly.
He and his wife. That's exactly correct. Uh-huh.
So he designed these, and what a great first set of headphones from a company. I mean, that was his first headphone, and it's awesome. It's really the sound signature is very audiophile friendly. So if you're head fires looking for a noise canceller, the M4U2 is a really great compromise piece. The active noise, I guess I shouldn't have to say this anymore because I've already said the QC15 has the best noise canceling of any headphone I've tried so far of active noise cancelers. So obviously that means the M4U2 isn't going to be as good there, but it does cancel noise well, just not as well as the Bose. And it sounds phenomenal with music, much better for my tastes than the QC15. And that also goes for the UE 9000 back there. The Parrot Zik, which a lot of people were talking about after the last or two CESs ago, the one designed by Philip Stark, is also a very good piece. Sennheiser makes one called the MM450X that I like more than the bigger version of it, the MM550X. It just sounds better to me. But the MM450X is a pretty amazing piece and is ultra portable. And that's also Bluetooth and noise canceller and passive wired. I mean, it's really a tech piece. Yeah, it's really cool. It's kind of expensive, though, $450. Yeah.
Yeah, the PSBs are expensive. The M4U2s at $400, I believe.
Yeah, right. Yeah, those are $400, but those are fantastic.
Yeah.
I
came to the exact same conclusion as you. I actually took the PSBs and the Bose on a plane flight and played music from my iPhone and, you know, just switched the headphones back and forth. And I came to the exact same conclusion that you did, which was that the Bose were better noise cancelers, but the PSBs sounded better on music.
Yeah, if I had to choose one or the other, I'd probably, luckily I have them both, but if I had to choose one or the other and it was going to be my primary headphone, it would go to the PSB without a doubt. Yeah. One other good one that I want to mention is the Sony MDR-1 RNC. I don't know how they name these things, but anyways, all these numbers and letters. The MDR-1 RNC is also a very good noise canceler. It's wired, it's not wireless, as is the PSB, to be clear. That's also wired. The Sennheiser MM450X, the Sony MDR-1 RNC, the UE 9000, what else did we mention? The PSB, they all have passive modes, which is nice to know because when your battery dies, you still can use them. And also if you're in a quiet room, there's no reason to waste your battery using noise canceling, which you have to do with the Bose
that's right. You can't, if the battery goes out or you turn off the Bose, you hear nothing. There's no music coming through them at all.
Right, right.
And well, that's a disadvantage. I agree.
It is. And noise canceling on is on all the time, which in a quiet room you don't need.
It's pointless. So
that's kind of a big advantage to having a passive mode with the noise canceller. Especially if it sounds better in passive mode, like with the PSB, because I think the PSB sounds better in its passive mode. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And if you want the passive mode in the PSB and you don't need the noise canceling, you can save $100 and get the M4U1.
The M4U1. Again, I don't know how they come up with these. I think it stands for music for you.
Something like that.
So yeah, that one's a really good headphone and it sounds like the M4U2 in its passive mode. And if you don't need noise canceling, like you said, it's a way to save $100. That's a real nice headphone. I think it comes in different colors too. I have one in red.
By the way, Warren Chi, let me find it again. Warren Peachy says that Hi-Fi Man has a budget tube amp called the EF2A for $169.
Ah, there you go. I haven't used that one yet, but yeah, like I said earlier, I'm a fan of Hi-Fi Man's products, so I haven't tried that.
Yeah, I am too, actually.
I guess I'll have to try it at RMAF and see if he has it there.
Right. Okay, so my last question, and Warren, this comes from Warren Peachy as well, and all I'm glad he's asking this because we're almost out of time.
He's being nice. I know Warren.
Oh, okay. Oh, you've salted the chat room with some buddies,
eh? Well, we have you on the homepage, so yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, the question is, and I was going to ask this anyway, so I'm glad it came up, and here it is. What are your favorite over-the-ear, what are called circumoral, where the pad actually goes outside the ear and sits on your head? What are your favorite on-ears, and what are your favorite in-ears?
The in-ears I use most now are probably the JH Audio JH13 Pro Freak Phase. It's the new version of the JH13 Pro. It's a custom in-ear monitor. I think it runs $1,000 or $1,100. And it's just detailed, a hyper-detailed piece. There's a little bit of bass emphasis, but very tastefully applied. Doesn't affect the mids at all. It's probably an emphasis around 50 hertz, a few dB of emphasis there. And so I like the way that one sounds a lot. Hyper detailed, just love it. So that's probably my favorite, or at least right now, my favorite custom in-ear. Universal fit in-ear, the new Shure SE846, there's the box for it. Well, there it is right there, that white box. That's not really out yet, but Shure has done a really nice job with this new SE846. The downside to it, it's going to be $1,000 when it does come out.
Yikes.
Yeah, and it's a universal fit. And then Sennheiser also makes one that actually I think the review is up on InterFidelity right now, and it'll be in our gift guide, the Sennheiser IE800, which I actually have around here somewhere. The IE800 is Sennheiser's flagship. That's also about $1,000. Oh, I have it right here, I think. Yeah, and then this is the Sennheiser IE800, and these are about $1,000. These are outstanding. A little bit of bass emphasis. It's a single driver dynamic. Wonderful piece. Great coherence. And I love that piece as well. As far as around the ear open, the Sennheiser HD800 is one of my favorites, just for the detail. And it's just so technically on. I mean, it's such a fantastic headphone if you drive it right, the Sennheiser HD800. Problem is, I've found it to be challenging to pair it with an amp, you know, to find an amp that's a good pairing with it. And luckily, Sennheiser created their own. It's actually in the picture as well, but it's underneath that 800 behind me, called the HDVD800. Has a DAC, USB DAC on it as well.
Is it difficult to drive because its impedance is strange? Not,
you know, I don't know. It does
headphones?
Have a strange impedance. I mean, it, like a lot of dynamic headphones, voice coil type, you know, it does have a peak, an impedance peak. Not all do, but it has a pretty severe one. I don't remember exactly where we're at, maybe around 100 hertz-ish. It really jumps. I don't know that is as much to do with it, or if it's just, you know, one of those things that's just a, you know, a pairing thing. You know, you put it with the 800 can be, if you hear an 800 and it's brightish to you, you know, trying it with different amps may remedy that. And then the planar magnetic headphones, I'm really big into the Audizy LCD 3, which is outstanding. Audizy, it looks like, some people pronounce it Audiz, A-U-D-E-Z-E. Those are immensely popular on HiFi, especially the Audizy LCD 3s and 2s. And then Hi-Fi Man, as we talked about earlier, has a whole range of planar magnetics that are also good. But as far as my favorite overall, I'm probably using the Fostex TH900 more than any other headphone as far as in around the ear, just because it may not be technically as good as something like a Sennheiser HD800, but it's so versatile and it sounds so beautiful with so many different systems, be they portable, desktop. It scales with, you know, my best systems very, very well, but I can even use it with some of my portable systems. I actually use it with things like this. This is a Sony PHA-1 portable DAC and amp. I actually do use that to drive the TH900. It's not the best the TH900 can sound, but when I'm on the go and I can use it with that, it's pretty cool. Yeah, so that's nice. So yeah, the TH900 is probably the one I use more than any other right now, and I'd have to say it's probably my overall favorite. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, great recommendations, great hour of conversation. I want to thank you so much, Jude Mansilla, the founder and editor of HeadFi.org. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much, Scott, for having me on. And like I said, big fan. It's cool to be here.
Thank you. Appreciate it. You can read all about headphones at Jude's website, head-fi.org. where you can join up and be a member of that community and post your own questions and comments and reviews of headphones and really, really dig deep into the subject with Jude there. And I sure do appreciate him being here. You can find me, of course, at avsforum.com, which is also a forum that you can join and log in and ask questions and chat about anything you'd like to in the realm of audio video science, which is where AVS comes from. You can email me at scott@twit.tv. And you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. You can always find previous episodes of Home Theater Geeks as well on our new YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/twithometheatergeeks. And of course, on the Twit Network at twit.tv. Next week, my guest geek is scheduled to be Josh Kiroff, who is a video guru, and he will just have returned at that point from the Infocom trade show in Florida, where they display all the latest and greatest in display technology. So I'm looking forward to talking with him about 4K and other display-related subjects. So I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.